Chapter 11. Malakhurst.
Fleet systems at full alert, said Sota Nul, as they hurried through the dark of the vengeful spirit's underworld.
Malakhurst was breathing hard. He was sweating blood inside his armor. He thought he could still feel the heat of the burning sky on his face.
Why did we come out of the warp?
He asked as they hurried on. He needed to get to the bridge. He needed to see what was happening. Sota Nul was siphoning information from the ship's systems, but it was not the ship or its systems that worried him.
As in heaven, so on earth.
Emergency translation, owing to sudden extreme change in etheric conditions, said the tech witch,
and coughed a blurt of binaric that might have been an approximation of a mirthless laugh.
It threw us back into reality.
And the enemy were just there?
We dropped right on top of an outer system orbital fortress cluster, said the tech witch,
her voice sounding all too human as it purred the words.
A major one. 5 star forts, a Beta 9 grade weapons platform network, 40 monitor craft, and a battlegroup sized fleet of warships. I sense the presence of my unenlightened kin and the sons of Rogal Dawn. Do you ever have the sensation that you are being tested, stroke cursed?
You think this amusing?
I think it catastrophic, but not without opportunity.
To lose men and materiel in a pointless fight?
To see if your legion can kill without the hand of Horus on its shoulder.
He did not answer. 10 minutes of silence later, they reached a primary access hoist. Malakhurst overrode the lockouts and sent the hoist shooting up to the Vengeful Spirit's aft command cluster. Sota Nul peeled away as the doors opened, floating above a cluster of lesser tech devotees as they fell to the floor in obeisance. Malakhurst kept moving, shrugging off the calls of guards and legion warriors as he strode into the strategium. Shouted orders and the calls of system servitors replaced the blare of battle alarms. Hololights blinked and spun in the air beneath a domed roof of crystal. The shimmer of reactivating void shields blotted out the light of the stars as he glanced up. Aximand stood on a stone pillar at the room's center. A curtain of light surrounded him, changing as his eyes flicked across it. His mouth was set in the stitched mask of his face.
This is not the time for whatever you're here for,
said Aximand, as Malakhurst came to the base of the pillar. The deck trembled. Malakhurst recognized the sensation of the short-range guns firing.
Hold launch of all boarding formations,
shouted Aximand.
Bring everything into formation around us. Full weapon overlap.
He glanced at Malakhurst. The skin of Aximand's sutured face was sweating.
They are already inside firing range. We have no time to calibrate the main guns.
So close,
asked Malakhurst.
We came out of the warp in range of their guns, and they began to move while we were still recovering from the translation.
How long until we can make translation back to the warp? Asked Malakhurst.
Aximand's face twisted as though he were about to spit. Then it settled, his eyes still on the massive displays.
Too long,
he hissed.
This is Heta Gladius,
breathed Malakhurst, looking at the displays.
Our intelligence identified it as one of Dawn's cordon worlds to the solar segmentum.
The reports were accurate,
snarled Aximand.
We are a long way off course, said Malakhurst. We should translate back into the warp, even if it means running a storm.
Warp engines across 2/3 of the fleet are damaged. We need time before we can translate again. That's dependent on the warp surge that forced us out having ebbed, and what there is left to make the jump.
Even so, the War Master wills us to make all speed to Ullinor.
Does he?
Said Aximand softly. Malakhurst looked up at him sharply.
Yes, he does.
Aximand was silent for a second, eyes flicking between displays. Malakhurst could almost taste the pressure of concentration in the air.
Where have you been?
Malakhurst did not answer, but moved to the warp engine control banks. Tech priests were levering the scorched meat of servitors out of their cradles. Static blurred runes spun across screens.
We need to get back into the warp and back.
I asked you where you had been,
said Aximand.
Where are the others?
Asked Malakhurst, looking around.
Where are Falcus and Tormageddon?
Now it was Aximand's turn not to reply. instead calling down to one of the serf officers.
As soon as the Black Wolf and the Son of the Sword are in formation, all ships close on the third fortress.
We're going into the guns? Asked Malachurst.
We either strike or we sit here and take their cuts without reply. As you said, this is the War Master's fleet. He does not falter, he conquers.
The vengeful spirit began to slide forwards. Screens and displays showed the magnified images of the enemy fortress stations and the dark barbs of their ships. The ships were spreading outwards and forwards, enveloping the vengeful spirit's fleet in a cone with the star fortress cluster at its narrowest point. Behind it, the star of the system it was tethered to glimmered, a dot of silver just brighter than the firmament behind it.
The storms pushed us out just here, said Malachurst to himself.
Planets and star systems drew the currents of the warp to them like stones in a river. He knew that much. It was not surprising that a ship forced from it would exit close to a system. But to exit here, in sight of the enemy's guns...
Space! Space! Space!
Called a mechanical voice. A second later, the ship shook. The light of the void shields above the dome snapped. White flare lights blanked the void and stars.
Nova shell detonations!
Shouted a Legion deck officer. The screens dimmed as they compensated for the light of the explosions.
The Black Wolf reports shields down,
called another voice.
Hull-wide fires!
Three enemy ships identified as the Angel Absolute of the Ninth Legion, the Crusader's Blade, and the Stone Heart of the Seventh Legion.
Enemy boarding waves in the void!
Malachurst watched as the three Legion vessels burned close and then kicked away as they loosed their volleys of gunships and boarding torpedoes. The boarding elements would be in defense turret range at the exact time that the enemy's main guns began to fire. They would be riding into the detonation volumes of the thousands of macro shells. Dangerous, very dangerous. But it would mean that some of them would reach their targets.
Brace!
The void beyond the dome vanished in rolling blooms of fire.
Enemy boarding wave in turret range,
called a flat mechanical voice.
All specs and targeting systems at 62% veracity. Firing!
Malachurst saw the short-range projection of the vengeful spirit flare with target kill markers.
Breach impacts sections 42 to 48, level 615.
The deck lurched. Warning sirens began to sound. Malachurst felt the memory of the Plain of Slaughter rise in his mind's eye, its ground trembling with the drumbeat of explosions, the sky burning as the blood soaked the earth to mud.
Battles fought for pride, festering ambition, desires realized in darkness, all tipped the balance one way or another, came the memory of Amarok's voice. And all the while, Horus is getting weaker.
We have to go,
he said, his voice dry. He could taste iron on his tongue.
Oh, you fool! Pull back! Pull us back and get us into the ether!
Axeman turned his head to look at him.
Craven,
he spat.
This is not chance, brother,
said Malachurst, trying to blink away a sudden wash of nausea.
For the War Master, we must leave. We must flee.
No!
Growled Axamand, and flicked a gesture at the edge of the chamber. Legionaries moved forwards, all wearing the gold-dipped skull faceplates of his war clan.
I command here. Horus commands,
said Malachurst.
And I am his truest son,
said Axamand, his voice the fall of an axe edge.
And when he returns, he will see that I alone served him truly.
Malachurst looked at the circle of warriors, at the levelled muzzles of their guns. There was no point in saying that they could not do this, that he was the equerry of the War Master. It would make no difference. He saw it now. He saw the cracks in the Legion and its warriors. Pride, anger, fear even. Perhaps cracks that Horus and even Malachurst himself had used to make them what they needed to be, but which now yawned wide. Without Horus, they were just warlords and killers trying to follow a dream they did not understand. He smiled coldly. Axamand looked back, the light of the battle gleaming in his eyes. For a second, he fancied he thought he saw a spark of doubt in that gaze. The deck shook.
You are no little horse, he said. You do not have the strength.
Shake him,
said Aximand, and the skull-faced warriors closed around him. Lyak. They stepped from twilight into dead red sunlight. Lyak caught his breath as he looked around. His mask tightened on his face, and its mouth snarled wider. They stood on a mesa of black glass. Its summit was rippled, as though shaped by the retreat of a gently lapping sea. Things moved beneath the solid surface, though. Pale things with manes of feelers and segmented bodies. Auroras of pink, emerald, gold, and cyan billowed and folded in against a black sky above them. The sun itself was a ragged circle that lit the land beneath, but left the rancid sky untouched. Beneath the mesa, a forest swayed. Silver trees murmured, their leaves chiming like bells. Things that might have been moths rose in clouds from one tree as Lyak watched. Clouds of fine grey dust scattered from them as they wheeled. Buildings rose from the canopy here and there, reaching for the sky with slender serrated towers. Lyak could see shapes moving against the horizon. For a second he thought they were striations in the layers of light. Then he realized that they were the shadows of vast structures spanning the space between earth and sky like the ribs of a vast creature. They flexed as he looked at them, and he had the sense of both claustrophobia and comfort, as though he and all the world around him had been swallowed into a womb, or a stomach.
This was the cradle of the Eldar race, said Lorgar.
And its grave, said Actea.
She had come to stand beside Lyak and the Primarch. Her blind eyes were flicking back and forth beneath her shut eyelids. The crystal bulb of blood sat in her twitching hands.
It is a sacred place, breathed Lorgar. Here a god was born. You can hear its birth cry still.
For a second, Lyak wondered what his lord meant, but then, just as he was about to speak, every sound and sensation merged. The slow beat of the moth wings, the chime of the leaves, and the sigh of the wind rose and blended, adding and combining, until suddenly the world was roaring at him, the sound deafening and beautiful, and he knew that if he did not stop listening, then he never would. Around them, the remaining word-bearers had fallen to their knees.
Your brother is here, said Actea. He knows you have arrived.
Yet he waits for us to come to him, said Lyak, looking at the shadows of cities on the horizon. He was sure that the silhouettes of the towers and domes had altered position since he had last looked. He hides, he said. Lorgar smiled.
He is merely letting us come to him.
A petty exercising of power. A small thing. But to the exalted prince of the last-born god, no pleasure is too small. In this case, his pride and arrogance are sacred. The Primarch looked at Actea. She was shivering. The calm that she wore like a cloak had been pulled away. She looked hunched. Hunted.
Can you lead us to him?
Asked Lorgar. Actea shivered and looked up at him, breathing raggedly, her attention seeming to pull back from somewhere inside her. She nodded, but her hand shook as she raised the crystal sphere of blood to her face.
This way,
she said, and then stepped towards the forests and the distant sky. Lorgar followed. The word-bearers rose from their knees and fell into a star formation around him. Only Lyak held back, Kulnar and Hebek just behind him. The mask was murmuring hisses into his ears, but beyond that he thought he could hear other voices, familiar voices, saying things that he could not hear, but felt that he wanted to know. Hebek turned his head to look at Lyak. His eyes burned with mute hate.
I do not like it either, said Lyak under his breath.
I do not like it at all. Then he followed. Beneath his feet, the pale creatures swam languidly through the black stone, grinning up with needle smiles. They descended to the forest by a path that slid back and forth across the side of the mesa like the track left by a snake. The ground beneath the trees was dark, dappled by light falling through the shifting canopy. Dust spores puffed into the air under their steps. Scent coiled through his mouth and nose, despite the seals of his mask showing green and the hooks clawing his nostrils. It smelled of flowers, of crushed spices, of sweat and organs freshly opened by a knife. His head spun, and only the cold metal pain of the inside of the mask held his thoughts from racing down paths filled with sharpness and the whisper of false promises. The trees around them were grey-trunked, their bark soft and moist, like the skin of a fish. They had been walking for longer than he could remember. But that was it. He could not. There were faces. Faces in the mauve twilight between the trees, watching, moving in and out of sight as they kept pace. He saw long legs, smooth muscle, obsidian eyes of every creature that he had ever seen or read of in the sixth Liber Chaotica or the books of Yebion. And more, things he had never heard whisper of, demons of every variety and form, haired, skin-sheathed or flayed, mute or drooling golden spittle into the mouths of their kin, and each was no more than a glimpse, a sliver of wonder and horror given to him and then snatched away by the sway of the trees. The forest pressed closer and closer, and the faces came nearer with every glimpse. He had glimpsed realms of the Dark Prince, where the cacophony of sound was such that it blurred the solidity of objects. Here, though, all was softness. Lyak wanted to sit down, to sit on the soft ground and let its soft dust cover and fill him, and wait for all the things that were watching from behind the tree trunks to come and find him, snuffling and giggling and sharp, and then,
"Sulnu isnag, suteb ashen."
He spoke the words of warding as clearly as he could through the thick mass of spore powder that clogged his mask's speaker grill. He heard laughter as he forced out the words, but he kept speaking and kept walking. Only Lorgar and Lyak's blade slaves moved as though unconcerned. Actea was shaking, thoughts manifesting around her as spirals of light and the shadows of feathers. All of her power was focused on the sphere of blood that she clutched close to her face. She did not look beautiful or regal now. She was hollowed and hunched, a crone with the skin of a girl, forcing herself to take the next step by will alone. Lyak saw one of his word-bearers halt ahead. Lyak was about to lash a command at him, when the warrior dropped his weapons, unfastened his helm, and took a breath. The breath never ended. The warrior breathed and breathed, his neck swelling as the spore-laden air poured through his lips. The brothers near him stumbled to his side, moving as though wading through molasses. Lorgar raised a hand, and Lyak felt the psychic force behind the gesture.
"This is a sacred place," said Lorgar. "It must have its due."
The warrior fell to his knees. His armour was splitting, wet vents yawning wide to breathe and breathe. A ripple of low hoots and cries chuckled from the forest. Grey roots were reaching up from the dust. Each of them was covered in smiling mouths. They pulled him down into the ground. A long psychic scream touched Lyak's mind, and then was silent. A red stain spread across the ground where the warrior had been standing. Crystal roses began to grow from the spot, petals wet and bright.
"It is close," hissed Actea,
voice trembling with effort. Blooms of darker red had blossomed on her robes.
"Very close."
Lorgar nodded. Behind the Primarch, the grey trunks of the forest swayed and shivered. Beyond them there was something else, something that he could not quite see.
"You know your duty, my son," he said.
Lyak nodded. He knew what he had been asked to do, what he was here for. He knew. Lorgar stepped forwards. Lyak followed, and suddenly the forest was behind them. And above them were towers and walls and domes, reaching up and up to a perfect powder-blue sky. Lyak halted. Beside him, the surviving warriors were frozen in reverence. Actea folded slowly to the ground, her hands crooked claws around the sphere of blood that had led them here. Lorgar closed his eyes briefly, as though to see the sight for the first time again. "The city palace of the Princeling of Perfection," he said. "The gods have blessed us." Above them, trumpets wailed from the towers.
Volk. The chamber was spherical. Fused black glass skinned its walls. Stalactites projected inwards from them, their tips needle fingers pointing to the thing that lay at its heart. To Volk's eyes, it was a vast statue cut from a lump of black stone. Its features were crude and seemed to have been hacked into the stone in blunt relief. Its limbs were held tight to its bulk, its legs folded beneath, its arms clutched close. It reminded Volk of a primitive gargoyle. Rows of teeth snarled from beneath lidless eyes. Wings sat curled on its back, and each of the eight arms folded across its torso and back held a different weapon. A knife, an axe, a sword. Chains bound it, looping over it, punching into the stone and radiating away to the edge of the chamber. The links glowed, yellow and white with heat. Pools of molten metal hung in the air, filling from cascades that poured from openings dotting the inner surface of the chamber. The statue's serrated smile gathered shadows from the furnace glow. Volk wanted to look away, but his gaze held on the statue. Memories filled him, pressing into his mind like claws into wet clay. He felt the bite of a stone edge in his neck, and knew that the hand that had napped the flint was the first to make such a tool, not to cut wood or kill for food, but for murder. He felt the heat on his face as the hammer fell on the twisted rods of steel, blow by blow, making them a sword that would carry a song of conquest into the future. He felt the kick of the rifle butt into his shoulder, tasted the black powder smoke in the back of his throat, felt the caress of a thousand tools of death as they touched history for the first time. Argonis shifted beside him, and suddenly he was aware of the others standing with him on that lip of stone, gazing at the statue. Perturabo stalked forwards, slowly, the shell of his exo-armor moving with a whisper. Volk tried to move, but could not. Heat threaded through him, whispering as it touched servos, spreading in a murmur across interface links.
"Son of my son."
Volk heard the voice, heard it echo, but knew that it had spoken inside his skull, to him alone. It was deep, like the sound of distant guns.
"I have waited and watched you for so long. I have so much to give you."
Pain flooded him. He was falling without moving, the sight of the cavern a circle shrinking above him as he plunged down and down. Every piece of flesh in his body felt as though it were cooking, the nerves singing as the sinew charred. He tried to claw himself up, but the light of the present was growing smaller. All he could remember was the past, broken into shards, the first cut of a knife through his skin, the clatter of a gun chamber eating rounds, the roar of enemies charging, more numerous than the bullets ripping them apart, and the hunger for more strength, for a sharper edge, for the power to tear them down and leave them as blood in the mud. He was there, screaming the song of the killing edge and the bullet's kiss.
"Do not resist. There is so much that you will be."
The voice was a patchwork of gunfire and explosions, the sound stitched together from slices of a life spent living to destroy, endure, and destroy again.
"So long have you endured, but you were not meant to survive. You were meant to be cast down, to burn and break. That is the dream of your souls and the dream you shall live. I give. So must I take, and I shall give to you. But before that, I have a service that you must do for me."
Volk felt the presence rise in him. He could fight, but he did not want to. The voice in his skull did not sound like something to deny. It sounded like the wishes and fears he had held ever since he had come from the wrecked cities. He'd always been strong, but never strong enough. A killer, but never equal to the enemies that came against him. And now he knew he would be.
I am within. I am without.
He opened the last stitch of his soul, and the furnace fire poured into him. He opened his mouth.
My son,
said the demon. The iron circle turned, weapons rising. Argonus's bolter was in his hand and leveled. Volk's gaze rose to meet them. His face was a mask over fire. Roaring light spilled from the holes of his eyes. The metal of his augmetics was red with heat. The demon looked down the barrels of the guns and smiled.
Sons of my son, I have waited long for your coming.
The plates and pistons down Perturabo's back twitched in sequence before he turned.
You are the creature that is bound here, he said.
Bound, preserved, hidden, set free. It is a matter of perspective.
You are bound, said Perturabo,
and raised the head of his hammer to point at the demon's burning grin.
And being bound, you can suffer. Do not play games with me. I am here for information that you shall give me.
I know, said the demon. You seek your brother. You seek the Eightfold Prince of Slaughter. I know this Perturabo. I have watched him through the eyes of the guns that fire on his fields of battle. I know that Horus has sent you to bring Angron back. A dog sent to drag its rabid kin back to the hearth.
Perturabo did not move or speak. Then he was across the gap between him and Volk's body, his hand clamped around Volk's throat, lifting him off the floor. He held him there, pistons and servos hissing as they braced. He looked into the fire pouring from Volk's eyes. His face was impassive. Heat washed from Volk's mouth as the demon chuckled.
I am the red in your blood, and the edge of your blade, Lord of Iron.
The voice weighted the title with mockery.
I know your kind, said Perturabo. I have seen your heart. I have felt the kindness of your lies.
The bastard child of the Emperor cut you deep, my son, said the demon. He took so much from you. Your strength, your certainty. I could see it. You are bleeding still.
Volk's hand rose. Perturabo's grip tightened, but the demon simply tapped the plates covering the Primarch's forearm with a metal digit.
All the iron without will not heal such wounds.
A muscle twitched in Perturabo's temple.
But a weapon, Perturabo. A weapon to match that of the gods. Then what would the lies of my kind mean? You sought such a weapon on Talon. Yes, and had it torn from your grasp by the brother you serve. But you never thought to look within.
Perturabo was silent for a long moment, then released his grip on Volk's throat, but the warrior remained hanging in the air, the burning grin still in place.
What is this that you have brought us to?
Asked Argonus, the words coming dry from his mouth, but his bolter steady.
He brought you to where he thought he could find answers, said the demon through Volk's mouth. But his path leads him in a circle down, ever down. No matter how far you try to move away, back you come to the Black Heart. He keeps finding the answers he does not want to hear.
The demon was still looking at Argonus.
The courts and principalities of the ether are at war, scrambling over the soul of your war master and his bastard brothers.
You are a sharp edge, Argonus. A sharp edge. I know you. I was in your hand when you killed for the first time. Every edge you honed was a song I heard.
It smiled with the half-metal ruin of Volk's mouth.
Release him, demon,
snarled Argonus.
You actually care, don't you?
I have no heart for human attachments. Only the severance matters. But you have a murderous soul, Argonis. You should not care what happens to this one any more than you cared what happened to the brothers you killed on Istvan, or the other tunnel children you left bleeding for food before you became the Unscarred.
It smiled. Molten metal stretched between Vok's teeth.
You should not care, yet care you do.
Like a brother.
Enough, said Perturabo, and the word echoed over the roar of the molten iron falling from the world above. You are the heart of Sarum. The Red Priests are yours. What they know, you know. So answer me now. Where is Angron? How can we find him?
The same way you can find any beast gone rabid. Follow the carcasses and the cries of the dying.
That is not an answer.
Come, son of iron. Do not disappoint your father. I have given you many gifts in the long years, but this one thing cannot be given freely.
How long have you been bound here? Asked Argonis, before Perturabo could speak. Volk's head pivoted towards him.
Since times lost and unremembered, Wolf of Chthonia.
I was there when the first soul made a tool to take life. I was born in bone sharpened to points and flint shattered into arrowheads. The roar of gunpowder and the curve of the scimitar are my breath and the smile I give to the battlefield.
Embers breathed from Volk's mouth. What remained of his visible flesh was black and blistering.
Others were born from the first murder. But the first weapon was my mother, and the hand that made it my father. And every kill you make, I am with you in the making of. I am the muse of atrocity, and such songs have you made with the instruments I gave you.
You are trapped here, said Argonis. I've seen your kind. I've seen the War Master summon and dismiss the most powerful of your kin. They do not sit in chains. He looked from Volk to Perturabo. This is a thing of deceit, Lord. A creature that will barter any lie to be free.
But I do not want freedom, son of Horus.
Argonis blinked then.
I am a prisoner who appreciates that his bars keep others out as much as they keep me in. Freedom is not the price for what you ask.
Silence fell, stretching, broken only by the creak of Volk's armor as it strained with growing heat.
What is the price? Said Perturabo at last.
Are you set on doing as Horus asks? Or are you going to turn aside?
My course is set, said Perturabo. Speak your price.
There is a song to destruction, Perturabo. Every blade, every bullet sings its song in the shadow of our realm. You have been hearing this song your whole life. All I wish is that you open your soul to it, that you sing your song of obliteration so that I may hear it. I will not give you my soul, said Perturabo, his voice a rasp of warning.
Not you, nor any of your kind.
I know, but I will hear you sing for me, son of iron and blood.
It is not the price of what you ask. It is the consequence of the path you walk. The price was hearing you say that you would not turn aside, and hearing the truth in your words. You cannot give me your soul, Perturabo. You have been ours since life sparked in your flesh.
Perturabo flicked a hand. The iron circle surged forwards with a boom of released pistons. Explosive rounds roared from the cannons on their shoulders.
Volk twitched as the gunfire tore into him. His body was distorting with heat now, the armor plates flowing soft, the flesh glowing like unquenched steel. Within, he watched and heard every word coming from his lips, but he was not listening. He could hear the sound of eternity roaring around him.
"Deluge," said the demon. "You will find what you seek on Deluge."
Perturabo turned and stepped towards the door they had come through.
"He is not your brother any longer," said the demon, "any more than the serpent child fool that was Fulgrim is anything other than an echo of the being you knew.
They are slaves, chained to the power that remade them."
"Give me back my son," said Perturabo,
his voice low, his eyes unblinking,
"or I will shatter this prison that keeps you free from the tides of your master and vile kin. You talk too much, creature. You do not wish freedom from your chains. You want to keep the freedom from the god that would claim you. Give me my son."
The demon was silent. The air shimmered around Volk's body.
"I'm not going to give him back to you," said the demon. "I'm going to give you a weapon. There are betrayals still waiting for you, Lord of Mine. Other brothers that would turn on you, as Fulgrim did."
"Who?"
"Not Angram. Not any who are shackled to the gods. Mortal treachery cuts deeper than that of gods, for what promises did gods ever make that they can betray?"
Volk's body dropped to the rocky floor, a jumble of half-melted metal and cooked meat.
"Do you know what a weapon is, Perturabo? It is a question. Hold a knife against a throat, and you have to ask, what am I?"
Volk's body twitched. Perturabo's weapons loaded and charged with a clatter of ammunition and a buzz of charge coils.
"You see, for all of the beautiful, terrible things that I have helped mortals create, they are just matter. A knife's edge means nothing. The bullet is just metal before it leaves the barrel."
The mass of armor and bubbling flesh began to stand. Somehow, a voice still came from its mouth.
"It takes soul and mind to pull the trigger. To make a tool, a weapon."
The last syllable was a creaking hiss from charred lips. The figure that had been Volk raised its head and opened its eyes.